Lewis wastes no words. He's not a master stylist like Tolkien, but he is very good at moving his characters from one way to the other. Where Tolkien would have a very long descriptive journey of just walking through a woods or climbing a mountain, Lewis manages to, bang, move his characters from one place to the other in a few lines, sometimes with an intrusive narrator that says, and that went on for a long while like this, but I'm not about to describe it, and other times just by cutting chapters or changing scenes quickly. But as powerful and as strong as Narnia is, and as effective as it is for many child readers, there are, I think, two large weaknesses in it. The first of these is a weakness that Tolkien noted also. Because Lewis throws pretty much every magical creature you could think of, from mermaids to satyrs to ogres to hags to krulls, whatever else he makes up in there, there's a little bit less of that connected unity of effect that the Tolkienian world, and I would say also the Le Guin world and Holdstock's world has. You can have pretty much any magical being that Lewis wants. There's a giant, there's a centaur, with not any of the kind of, what would you call it, magical physics or magical biology that might underlie and make consistent another world. And this kind of heavy-handed use of magic maybe moves Narnia more into pure fantasy and away from science fiction, where there has to be some kind of explanation, some kind of quasi-physics. But on the other hand, it makes it a little bit harder to enjoy Narnia in the same way as, say, Tolkien or Le Guin, because you kind of know that Lewis can always pull a rabbit out of his hat with some kind of new magical thing that's going to solve the plot problem. The other problem, I think, is that once a reader recognizes that Aslan equals Jesus, much of what's going to happen becomes fairly predictable. And I don't think Lewis minded that, because he was using Narnia not just to entertain, but also to communicate what he saw as the truth of his faith. And I don't want to undercut that. The Narnia books have been incredibly important to a great number of readers who otherwise feel very alienated from literature, because mainstream literature often is actively hostile to the Christian tradition. And so it's a very valuable thing to have works like The Lord of the Rings, even though it's not explicit in The Lord of the Rings, or The Chronicles of Narnia, which are at least not hostile, and actually in terms of the author's own lives and backgrounds, are very supportive of that. And I think it's one of the reasons they've become popular, because it doesn't just trash the ideology and the philosophy of a great number of its readers the way the modernist project is set up to be, kind of atheistic and so forth. I'd also say I don't want to end on Narnia with a criticism, so I'll point out some of the particularly strong and beautiful scenes. Aslan's sacrifice at the stone table brings tears to my eyes and chills to me every time I read it. The return of Peter, Susan, and Lucy to the ruins of Caer Paravel in Prince Caspian is eerie and creepy and very beautiful and works very well for exactly what Lewis wants it to do. The gold-creating water at either Goldwater or Deathwater Island in The Voyage of the Dawn Treader has been an image that's been with me my entire life. When they dip a plant into the water and it comes out a complete perfect representation of gold. And finally, Reepicheep, the extravagantly brave and gallant mouse who's a major factor of The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, and Aslan, the great lion, are memorable characters that, even though Aslan may be an allegorical representation, he also has a personality. And many writers who tried to imitate Lewis have lost that part. Aslan has a distinctive personality, and he's a distinctive character that you can see as an individual as well as a representation. The success of Tolkien at making fantasy more serious, and at Lewis of making children's fantasy very successful, opened a door to what many people call the golden age of children's fantasy, which runs from the late 1960s through the 1970s. During this time, Ursula Le Guin writes her Earthsea books, Susan Cooper writes the Dark is Rising series, Lloyd Alexander creates the Chronicles of Prydain, and there's lots of other not quite as aesthetically successful but important fantasy works that come out. I've already discussed Le Guin's Earthsea books, so we're going to skip those, except to note that the way that they fit into the genre of children's literature is that they're very much focused on the growth of characters from children to adults rather than adults who have matured in some way.